F1 podcast. We are live from Montreal, and I did say we because I had quite a surprise a few days before the Grand Prix. Anton decided to fly down and, well, I should really actually say fly up considering where you live, Anton.
But fair enough.
Fly here and join me for the Grand Prix. And together we are here recording the podcast, which is really exciting. It's been quite a week, hasn't it?
What an exciting weekend we witnessed. Incredible. I don't even know where to start, Sam.
Yeah, my head is like scrambled eggs, I'll be honest with you. And right now we are recording it hours after the race. So we've had quite an eventful weekend between practice, between being there for qualifying, obviously the race, and now here we are. It almost feels like a fever dream, to be honest with you.
So maybe to head it off, we could maybe to explain where we were seated. So as we had not bought our tickets together, we were in different spots. Sam, what spot were you in?
Yeah, I was in Grandstand 1. Where Grandstand 1 is it's right at the start-finish. And has a very good viewpoint of the garages, the paddock. For me personally, I was able to be directly in front of the McLaren and Ferrari garages, and then a little bit of the Aston Martin and Mercedes. So it was a prime spot, especially considering the traffic and what's taken place over this weekend. But it was a great place to see a lot of action, and because this will go into the race later, was heavily influenced by strategy, it was also a really cool thing to be able to see as well. But Anton, you also were at a really, really great spot on the track.
Yeah, so if you take the start finish straight, that bends to the right a little bit, and then you get turn one and you get turn two, which are the Senna corners. And I was in Grandstand 12, which is basically right at the the half moon of the second turn. So you have a view of both, the end of the start-finish straight, and the cars making a left turn into turn one, and then the right half moon, which is turn two, which was basically the spot during the race, which wouldn't really dry, where the rest of the track was drying up. So a lot of slippery moments I witnessed there, actually starting already in FP3. I think that was Joe who slid off the track. He hit the curb on turn one and then went on the gas and slipped off. But that's actually we're all messed up in
timelines.
Exactly, I was going to say. So I've been criticized various times this weekend for not having my day straight. But that was a Saturday. We started, of course, on the Friday, where we had pretty wet practice sessions, and teams weren't really able to set very competitive laps. It was difficult to do any qualifying runs, and long runs were also the teams did drive on slick tires in that second practice session, but it was during, I think, the whole session we had like slight drizzle, so difficult for the teams to really work on the setup, which I guess made it more interesting, because in the end, with teams having little time and also not really knowing what the weather would be the rest of the weekend. I mean, we knew from the beginning that we would get rain, but we didn't know exactly on which days and when and how it would affect all the different sessions. So that was quite interesting. There was a big question mark, and I don't know how it is to live in Montreal, but it seems like things can change every hour. I would say every 5 minutes almost.
That's very true. The weather was all over the place, and Montreal does have a tendency here to change on a moment's notice when it comes to weather, and that definitely played a part this weekend. We saw, like you had mentioned, Anton, I mean, there were moments in time where it was completely sunny and warm, and then within 5 minutes it's cold, the skies are gray, and it starts to rain. So very unpredictable, but also I think that's a huge element of why it was so exciting towards the latter part of the weekend. Yeah, as you mentioned, the practice, FP1, FP2, wasn't too exciting, but I would say one thing is that for Max especially, he didn't really have any time to kind of put any laps in and see about a setup. So
right, because he had this ERS issue in right. FP2 where he hardly he didn't really get any time on the track, like you said, Sam. So that was I guess for us all a big question mark heading into our predictions, but we'll see we'll see what happened there a little bit later. But that was a lot of things that were big question marks. And I think that going into qualifying, the qualifying session, I don't know, at the track, it was very exciting to watch. It was very nice to watch. And I think we saw a couple of unexpected things. First of all, Perez not making it out of Q1, which has been happening quite frequently recently. I think the bigger shock was even the two Ferraris not making it into Q3. That was something none of us had expected. We're having a cat that jumps on the table, so
this is the joys of recording it here slightly, together.
Aboard. All right. Yeah. So no, I think that was a big surprise for many of us, because I know I, for one, had expected the Ferraris to do really well actually over here, not only because of Monaco, where of course Leclerc won and the Ferraris seemed to be very, very on it. I think from what I heard from others too, everybody was really expecting the Ferraris to do well. So for them to not make it into Q3, I think in the end they qualified 11th and 12th. It was the Aston Martins that just kicked them out. It was Alonso and Stroll on 9 and 10 in that Q2 session. Yeah, that was a big surprise for me.
Yeah, it was absolutely a surprise, especially given the fact that during practice they seemed to be doing, especially Leclerc, he seemed to be at the top and he was doing very well in terms of pace. So it was definitely surprising. I would say, in contrast to the Ferrari struggling, what was a pleasant surprise was also seeing Mercedes all of a sudden doing so well and finding this pace, and that was both for Russell and for Hamilton. So I think Hamilton obviously has quite a positive history with the Montreal track in some cases. Most recently last year, he was on the podium.
Exactly. Yeah.
And same with Alonso. I mean, Alonso was doing well as during qualifying. We were seeing him do quite well in the beginning. So it was nice to see Hamilton really get... It almost seemed like this was the first race of the season where you saw a little bit more of a flicker of his confidence in terms of what he was doing on the track. And also, I think the car definitely had some pace in it. I'm pretty certain that they came with more upgrades, Mercedes, this weekend. So that obviously was very beneficial. And then, of course, translating that into Russell's performance as well, which we already know, securing pole position, but in quite a narrow margin, tying.
Well, exactly. No
Max,
margin
yeah,
at all.
No margin at all.
No margin at all. Yeah, and that was the first time that happened since 97 that we had the pole sitter at the same time with the second. Well, the second time, yeah, actually in 97 it was three drivers that. That managed to do that.
That's unbelievable.
That was Villeneuve, Schumacher, and Frentzen, I think. Oh, okay.
And Villeneuve was on the track this weekend.
Yeah,
he was. Yeah.
Showing some criticism here and there.
He was showing a little bit of criticism. Yeah, definitely. I mean, and he was on the track, and I saw him from my spot, although... maybe that helped Daniel Ricciardo, in fact, the criticism. And
fire
and
him up a little
fire
bit.
Fire him up, because he did very well during qualifying. I was very surprised with him. And I would say the Racing Bulls altogether. I mean, him and Tsunoda performed, did a very good job in terms of qualifying.
Yeah, and it's fun to see, because, I mean, at the start of the season, it looked like, the teams were split between the five fast ones and the five slower ones, but especially the V-carbs, they've been showing a lot of pace recently, and it's good to see both cars in qualifying get into the Q3 session. You know, during the race, Tsunoda was unfortunate in a lot of ways. But if you look at the qualifying sessions, I mean, in Q1 and Q2, he was setting very, very competitive times. And yeah, I think it's great to see that the field is bunching up again a little bit. So yeah, I think all in all, interesting qualifying session. Some surprising results. Again, Williams making it into Q3. Of course, that being Albon. But even Sargeant didn't set a bad qualifying
time. No, he was doing well.
Yeah, I think he qualified 13th or so. But
yep.
Of course, in the race, he was slightly less... Well, what do you want to call it? Fortunate? I guess it was his own doing, mostly. But yeah, that's a bit of a... That's a bit of a... Yeah, I don't know.
You're at a loss for words.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if I want to go there. But yeah, well, we've seen James Vowles also flirting with Carlos Sainz over the weekend, and talking about contracts. I think it's also fair to mention that Yuki Tsunoda has extended his contract with Red Bull. Of course, we heard that Sergio Perez had renewed his contract, which I guess Tsunoda was probably aiming at that seat a little bit, but I'm happy to see that we get to see more of Yuki, at least for next year in the V-carbs, and yeah, maybe that's the second reason why Danny Ric was triggered to do so well this weekend. And like you said, great performance during that qualifying session.
Yeah, sometimes comments and pressure like that tends to help amplify people's performances. In the case of Daniel Ricciardo, I think that I wouldn't have a doubt, or I wouldn't doubt that also elevated it. And you know, it's great that Tsunoda was able to sign another year extension. Here's my question for you, though. When it comes to Sergio, do you believe that it made sense for the one-year contract extension with Red Bull?
Good question. I think everybody probably has something to say about that. Probably everyone has his opinion. You know, it's the safe choice, I would say, for Red Bull. I mean, he knows the team, he knows the car. Question is how well he knows it, but... yeah, I mean, he's there, he's comfortable, he's not much of a troublemaker, he does what he does. I'm not saying he's a bad driver, although I might have made a comment
during
this weekend.
Here and there.
Yeah, but no, it's a safe option, and I do understand it in a way. On the other hand, if you're really going to have a championship or a constructor championship that's a little bit more competitive, it's going to be difficult to... I mean, now Ferrari struggled this weekend and it didn't score any points, so they're not really challenging Red Bull at the moment. But if you would have a season where they would challenge them, I'm not sure if Sergio Perez is going to be your driver to really win that Constructors' Championship with. But anyway, yeah, they went with it, and I guess I was expecting that it would lower the pressure and take some of the pressure off his shoulders, and that he would actually do a little bit better than he has been doing in recent weeks. But
I wonder if they made the decision to extend the contract for a year just to essentially buy themselves time to maybe make a decision. In terms of drivers at this point in time, options wise for a consistent, like, solid future, I don't know if they have a lot of options on the table right now. Is it a safer bet, like you mentioned, give him the one-year contract extension, see how things play out, where maybe there's a few more pieces that you can move next year that provide you a better opportunity? That would make the most sense.
Well, I guess time will tell.
Time will tell.
Yeah, but summarizing the qualifying sessions, I think what was really nice to see as a fan was that there was a constant threat of rain. So actually during the whole qualifying hour, we had some drizzle on the track, but we never really knew when it would start to rain harder. So none of the drivers really held back. Everybody went to set flying laps from the get-go and continued to do so. And in that sense, it was quite hectic, I felt. And but in a nice way. And in the end, actually, after that qualifying session, we had quite a lot of rain getting off the island, getting
That's
off the
very
track.
True.
It started to really pour down. So if it would have been I don't know, if it would have had a red flag and it would have been postponed, I think that Q3 session would have looked very, very different. And but in the end, again, ifs and buts. But all in all, the Saturday was really, really nice. And we didn't even know yet what we were gonna get on the Sunday, but talking about eventful, Sam, where do you want to start on that one?
Geez, I don't know. I mean, I will start by saying this. I think that the race itself was one of the most exciting races that we have seen this year. I think that this year has had a lot of unpredictability, which has made it very exciting and is something that is entertaining to watch on a race weekend, and this definitely held nothing back. I mean, we saw everything pretty much that you could see in a race. But one thing that I would say that I loved the most and that I was so thankful to be able to see live is some of the really exciting overtakes and the fact that there was really racing battles. I mean, we saw that. This is a track that caters to that, but it's also a track that comes with a heightened risk of crashes, of the unpredictability in terms of weather. And I mean, when you have all these factors playing, it just heightens that intensity. So when you see teams lay more into the strategy, but also you have the drivers close enough, especially the front four, for the most part, front four, five, let's say, even at some points, being able to truly race with each other. And then you have the midfielders. I mean, the best overtake, in my personal opinion, from the race itself was the Albon overtake.
Hands down.
The amount of confidence going into something like that, and also the fact that, let's not forget, this was at a period where it was raining. So there was pockets of the race where it was raining, and there were pockets of the race where it wasn't. And so there was also, like Anton had touched on earlier, areas of the track that were more wet and areas of the track that had more of a very obvious dry line. Where Albon was, it was wet. So the fact that he was able to lay into the confidence and the timing of that and weaving amongst both cars, managing to overtake and then go through the chicane was just, I mean, it was a masterclass. So I was very much impressed by that. I would say there were several other notable overtakes, but my I would say in terms of the racing, the most thrilling element of it all was that you didn't know for a large part of that race who potentially could win, because you had a situation where Lando was battling Max. You also had George at some point take the lead, and so it really, really was a thrill to watch when it came to that. What were your thoughts?
No, definitely. I think, trying to look at it chronologically with Russell starting from P1, and I think it was clear in the first few laps that that Verstappen was easily behind him and was going to overtake him. Then Verstappen made a little error into turn one, which was right in
you
front of me.
See.
So yeah, exactly. which gave Russell a bit of air, and Verstappen was defending against Norris for a while, but then I don't know, the Mercedes struggled a little bit later on, and it was actually the McLarens that both looked really, really good on the drying track, or the not a dry track, but when the track was drying up. I think that that little window between wet and dry is really where the McLaren feels very comfortable. We saw that twice during the race, because we had rain two times, we had drying track two times, and both Norris and Verstappen were able to overtake Russell, and it looked to me like it was going to be a battle between the two McLarens and Verstappen. Although Piastri, I guess, for the whole of the race. I mean, he had a decent race, but he struggled a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I think Norris was slightly more comfortable, but yeah, of course, Norris went with a different strategy. When we had the safety car for Sargeant spinning, one of the times when Sargeant
one
spun,
of the times, yeah,
yeah, and we saw that with that safety car, we had three cars going into the pits. Well, at the front end of the grid. So we had we had Verstappen, we had Piastri and Russell. I guess McLaren didn't want to double stack, or I don't know what the reason was that they wouldn't pit Norris. But Norris stayed out for quite a while, actually.
I believe they thought that if he was able to maximize, like, just do the fastest. The fastest laps possible, that maybe he would gain an advantage in
no, but
terms
that was under
time.
the
oh,
safety
right,
car.
Oh, right, yes.
Because
yes.
That's what you're referring to,
you're,
is later on.
Yeah,
so during
the first one.
Yeah, the first safety car, it was the three cars that went in.
Yeah.
And then Norris also went in the lap after that. But but of course, because of, you know, the fuel bunching up, that made sure that he came out behind.
Mm-hmm.
Then later, like about let's say 20 laps later into the race, the Verstappen and Russell, well, actually Hamilton first. Hamilton pitted for mediums, and then Verstappen and Russell also did, or Russell went to hards actually, and then Norris stayed out on track. And then at that point, and Norris indeed, like you said, tried to stay out on those intermediates,
mm-hmm.
really roughen them up and try to get the best in-lap possible. I think he drove another two laps on those tires,
mm-hmm.
then went in, and then actually came out ahead of Verstappen from the pits. And again, the pit entry was right in front of me, so we were all cheering for Norris coming out ahead of Verstappen. But the problem was that when the track was drying at that point, and that being the reason why everyone went to slicks, everyone except for Leclerc, who had already been on slicks, but I think that's a later point of talk. But yeah, so it was basically just a very the whole track was dry. But then in turn one and turn the thing was, into turn one, just on the curb, there's a little part of the track which is a little bit deeper, and it had standing water there for basically the whole day, even when the rest of the track was dry. So that was actually that puddle was being used by most of the drivers just before they went to slicks, when the intermediates were struggling because there was no water for them anymore, and they struggle on a completely dry track. Anyway, just out of the pit, that patch was also quite slippery, and Norris didn't get any traction and slipped both left and right, and then Verstappen overtook him. And I guess from that moment onward, it was a little bit more obvious who was going to win. But like you were saying, for a majority of the race, it could have been anyone's win. And that made it very, very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that seeing Norris, obviously, with colder tires and being unable to take Verstappen, was still exciting to watch that happen. But then, moreover, the battle between both Mercedes drivers later on towards the end, where actually, if you rewind it just a little further back, you have Russell. He seemingly made a few errors during the entire race, but he did have a moment where, with Piastri, he did try to overtake him, which eventually ended up being under investigation for a considerable period of time after the race, because it would appear that he forced Piastri off the track, which was then reviewed and determined that there was going to be nothing that would come of that. However, that was a moment, and he had gone wide as a result of that, came back, and Hamilton did capitalize upon that moment. Now, I would say with Hamilton, for a large part of the race, he was behind Alonso, and it did seem like he was trying often to gain some ground to be able to make a move at that moment in time. However, once through the pit stops and where he was placed at the moment that Russell had made his mistake, he was able to capitalize upon that, sliding into third. And then for a very brief period, he actually seemed to apply pressure to Lando and looking for at least two laps, like he would maybe even have the opportunity to overtake for second. However, that did not seem to be the case. And towards the end of the race, Russell was able to overtake him. And on the radio through with Mercedes, they had mentioned the fact that, to Russell at least, we heard that he was free to be able to race with his fellow driver, however, keep it clean. Now, I know that later on after the race, it seemed as though Lewis wasn't really satisfied overall with the race result for himself personally. Whether or not that played a part, probably. But at the same time, I do believe that for both drivers, I mean, battling on the track like that is really entertaining for the fans to be able to see, because it just further adds to something, especially towards the end of the race. We didn't know who was going to eventually land the podium. For Russell, it's a little bit more of a redeeming situation, because through a part of that race, he had made a few errors that unfortunately had cost him where he would have loved to see from where he was in pole position to possibly winning the race. However, like you said, Anton, I think that ultimately, if the rain wasn't a factor in the initial beginning of the race, I think Max would have definitely tried to overtake him a lot sooner. So that may not have been the outcome for Russell regardless. But it was interesting to see that dynamic between the two teams, drivers. The other team as well that had a driver pairing where, in contrast, there was actually team orders given was Alpine. And that was Esteban having to allow Gasly through in order to earn points. So that was something that I think, for Alpine at the end of the day, I think they gained 3 points, if I'm correct.
Yeah, they did.
And I mean, at this stage in the game, especially for Alpine right now, every point matters. So overall, I think it's a satisfying result for the team. Whether or not Esteban feels the same way, to be determined. I don't know if he'll ever truly vocalize that, but something that was a satisfying result. And I would say that the other team, or that we would say would be Racing Bulls in terms of the race, you know, Yuki and Daniel were in really good positions to be able to earn points at the end. However, unfortunately for Yuki, he did have that slide where he wound up in the wall, and truly that could have been a lot worse, because Hulkenberg just narrowly missed him. I mean, the reaction that he had was very good. And it's funny because I feel like I have deja vu, and Anton, you'll probably remember because it's not coming to my mind at this very moment, but there was a race where something similar happened and Hulkenberg had to make a very quick reactionary moment to be able to dodge an accident. Do you recall which one that was? Because I can't seem to remember it off the top of my head.
One that comes to mind, but that was not, I think last year Australia, we had Albon in Melbourne who went off track, and I think Hulkenberg just barely missed him, but I don't know if that's the one you're referring to. But yeah, it was a very close call. Mm-hmm. and there were actually quite a lot of touches during the race. You mentioned a while back that Hamilton was behind Alonso for a big chunk of his race. I have no idea whether it was shown on television, but there was one moment where Alonso and Hamilton just got out of turn two. And I think it might not have been shown, because I think there was something I saw on the screen. There was another battle going on where they were focusing on. But actually, Hamilton touched Alonso with his left front. He touched the right rear of Alonso. And that looked, Alonso slipped a little bit and he kept it on the road, but that looked very nasty. I was expecting an investigation there, because that was not a clean move. And that was exactly the same spot where in lap one, Perez touched Gasly, who spun. And just as we're summing it up, I mean, there was a lot of a lot of moments of contact. You mentioned that overtake, which I agree, I think for now is already probably the overtake of the year by Albon. Albon was extremely unlucky being hit by Sainz, who spun and basically he shifted back on the road and he touched Albon and took him out. And there were a lot of these moments. And the other one that you also mentioned indeed was Russell and Piastri. I was surprised too that there was no penalty there. I think in the end there weren't. Ricciardo got a penalty, I think, for an early start. I think he just moved before the lights went out, and he got a 5-second penalty for that. He served it in the pit lane. That's the only one I really recall. But we might have missed some other penalties. It was difficult to keep track of everything.
It really was. I mean, my head was at one point. Especially when the first safety car came. I couldn't keep up. I was trying so hard. There was just so much that was happening, and then the pit lane opened, and the activity was unbelievable. I mean,
there was another penalty which was given after the race. Perez has got a 3-place grip penalty for Barcelona. Because they deemed it unsafe what he did with his because he slipped and he crashed with his rear wing, and the FIA said that he should have stopped. He shouldn't have driven back to the pits. That was dangerous. So he's going to have a 3-place grip penalty for Barcelona. So I guess it's an uphill battle for Sergio.
Yeah, it is, and I didn't know about that penalty. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I thought that when we were watching the race, I thought, ooh, I don't know if that was the wisest decision to limp back to the pits, because
it was Red Bull who ordered him to do so, because they wanted to avoid another safety car. We'd already seen two, and Verstappen was creating quite a gap towards Norris, so they obviously didn't want him to cause another safety car or worse, a red flag. But in the end, not such a nice outcome for Sergio. Although, yeah, again, mostly his own doing. He slipped off by himself.
Yeah, it was definitely not a great weekend for him. Going into maybe some unfortunate ones when it comes to not a great weekend, Ferrari.
Oh yeah, I guess we got to talk about it.
We got to talk about it. It was painful, I'm not going to lie. It was painful, especially sitting directly across from them, to see Leclerc as a DNF, to see eventually Sainz as a DNF. It's just, especially coming off the backs of Monaco, was such a high to then have such a low. And a finish a race with absolutely no points as a team is just a really disappointing result. And I mean, at one point, I don't know if this was shown on TV, but in fact, at one point, it seems like everything was just off for them this weekend. Unfortunately, even including their garages, because at one point I watched when Leclerc had retired his car. And I don't know if they intended to do this. I kind of feel like they didn't. But they ended up putting his car in Sainz's garage. And then, of course, when Sainz eventually retired, his car went into Leclerc's. So even at some point, I think they just were off as a whole, as a team. Will they bounce back? I'm sure they will. Hopefully in Barcelona, of course, we would love to see it. But yeah, I think one of the biggest unfortunate results as a team, if not the largest at this stage, you could say, for this weekend, would have been Ferrari.
Yeah, I think we already had that incident where in FP2 Leclerc went out on intermediates when Leclerc wasn't declared wet yet, which was, I think, also partly the FIA was a little bit late declaring the track wet. Anyway, it started out like that, and up until the end, well, they didn't even make, neither one made the end of the race, but the full weekend was Leclerc, who with his tire strategies. I mean, I think what Ferrari was trying to do, because we all saw that the track was drying and there was some rain incoming, and I guess Ferrari just but Leclerc had already mentioned he had engine problems, but those were supposedly fixed, and then at that point I think Ferrari was just gambling on the fact that maybe those clouds wouldn't provide too much rain, and if he would already be on slicks, then he would be a pit stop ahead of the rest of the grid. But yeah, let's just say it didn't turn out that way, and his weekend was well, but yeah, Ferrari just had a bad weekend. I would say another team that didn't have a great weekend was Sauber. I mean, with so many DNFs, you would expect them to finally score some points. Mm-hmm. They didn't. And that's the contrast to, for example, a team like Haas, who also didn't score any points. I mean, Hülkenberg and Magnussen finished 11th and 12th, but at least you felt like they were competitive, like they tried different things. They were the only cars to start out on the wet tires, which in the end you could say was a good strategy. I mean, they made a lot of overtakes. On the other hand, you knew that there was going to be a turnover moment when intermediates were going to be faster and they would have a problem. And going to slicks would have been too early. So I mean, it looked very spectacular. Whether it really was the right call, I don't know. Of course, Magnussen had a bad pit stop too. If he wouldn't have had that, then he would have made some ground. But at least you feel like they're trying. They're doing everything they can. They're working as a team. I think things have changed in that team also with leadership. Ayo Komatsu has been doing a slightly different type of job than Gene Haas has been doing, and nobody was expecting a lot from neither Sauber or Haas at the beginning of the season, but Haas has scored a couple of points and they seem competitive, and with Sauber you just wonder what direction they're headed towards, but yeah, I guess I guess we'll see. I don't know, are they gonna score points this year, you feel?
I mean, I'd like to hope so. I know that they were in the conversation at
one
point.
I wasn't asking whether you're hoping so. I'm asking whether you think they actually will.
You know, I think, unfortunately, it's not going to come from Joe just based on the way that it's looking right now for him.
Right,
I think if points are going to be achieved, it's going to be from Valtteri. And Valtteri does have the ability to do it. So it's possible. I also believe, though, that, I mean, their recent trajectory hasn't been great. We know that. And I know that at one point in time they were in the conversation to try to lure Sainz over to their side. However, I judging by what we understand at this point in time, potentially, I don't think that conversation exists anymore. And if you look at historically the way that they have been this season, I mean, that would be a very, very big reason probably as to why. So they have potential, but I just don't see them actually achieving it at this moment. I think that comparing them to Haas is a really good comparison, because they both at the start of the season, I would say, are very balanced in terms of teams, where they were at, their possibilities, their drivers, maybe obviously not the same driving styles, but they have talented drivers. And unfortunately, we've seen one get a little bit more consistent and sharper in some areas, and Sauber unfortunately taking a step back, so time will tell, but I'm not so optimistic, to be honest. So is there any other highlights that you would like to mention before we flip over to the scores as we were physically at the track? Is there anything that you would like to mention as somebody there that you really enjoyed, or something that comes to mind?
Well, I think all in all, well, it's funny because I haven't been to many races. I've been to two, to be exact, and both were the Canadian Grand Prix. But it's funny to compare the 2 years with one another. And I think that, of course, you also, you know, you need to be, I guess, slightly just simply lucky with the type of weekend that you're going to get. And we had rain last year as well during the qualifying session, so It's not like weather-wise it was completely different, but yeah, I mean, this, I gotta say, I was very much in awe in the first time being at the Canadian Grand Prix, but I think I enjoyed this one even more simply because the weekend itself, I mean, what happened on track was just so amazing. There were I didn't have enough eyes to see all the things I wanted to see, so all in all, just a great experience, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that at the end of the day, we're fortunate to be able to be at the track and to see it live, and that comes with weather. With weather, it comes with all of these things, and I could have the biggest smile on my face sitting soaked in the rain. It's probably the only time where I'd be willing to stand or sit in the rain
or walk
voluntarily, or walk for, and on some days, several hours in the rain with the biggest smile on my face, because just being able to be in the presence of the cars and seeing everything that we're able to see that we normally see behind screens, and many people do as well, and some don't have the opportunity to be able to go see it live. So having the ability to do that is, I mean, the words can't ever describe it, especially for me personally. The most impactful moment for me always is right before the lights go out. And just that one brief moment in time, that 30 seconds, not even, that there is where there is only the drivers and their cars on the track, and there is just that anticipated moment. It's like, it's almost like everybody collectively holds their breath before the lights go out. And for me, that's a moment where when you're live in the presence of that, I mean, words just can't, even though I've kind of described it, but the feeling itself is indescribable. And it's a moment that I think for a lot of fans is the reason why when they are able to go, they're willing to do what they can to go have that moment once again, because it's just, it's something that is quite incredible to be a part of. So yeah, I think if there is just one word to sum up everything, it's just thankful to be a part of something like that and to see it. And of course, I will be buying my ticket for next year as soon as it goes on sale, because that's I'm already looking ahead to 2025. Maybe at that point, you know, you'll tell me with a few days notice that you're going to fly out and surprise me again.
Yeah, it's going to be with shorter notice each year.
Yeah.
So with such an eventful race, we would almost forget to talk about the scores and stats for Forecast F1. So let's get into it. We had the amount of players go up for this week. We had 887 people playing the game. And Sam, how many people do you think correctly predicted this podium with Verstappen, Norris and Russell on P3?
I'm taking a moment to think about this. Okay, I'm going to say 3.
2.
2?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're very close on that one. Yeah, we're laughing here because I had by accident, I told Sam beforehand how many, but it's a funny one because I had told her that there were 2 people. But actually, I checked how many people had a correct podium, but I had looked for Leclerc, Norris, Russell, and there were 3 people who had that.
But I didn't pick 3 because of that. Yeah. I just thought that I was going to be wrong because you had mentioned that you had calculated it incorrectly. So I thought it wasn't 2. And then,
but in the end, this one was also 2. So that's,
but
that's
this one was also 2.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
for that, the little, the expression on Sam's face, which you guys are not able to see. Anyway, let's move on. So we had an average score of 36.4. And I'm actually thinking that's very similar to what we had during last time out in Monaco.
That's a low score.
Checking now, Monaco was 33.0. So
Wow. Slightly
higher, 36.4. And the lowest score is also very similar to Monaco. In Monaco was 6.1, and it's 6.0 for the Canadian Grand Prix. So let's get into the winners, or the people on the podium for this race. P1 is François Waldeck from South Africa. He scored 73.0 points, and he wins this. He wins this weekend. He was one of those people who had a correct podium.
Wow.
And P2 is Rory Whittington from the UK. I think that's the first time that Rory is playing the game. So.
Nice way to start.
We're not all that lucky to start out like that.
Yeah.
He scored 70 points, and on P3 also with a correct podium. So those are the two people, P1 and P3, who had a correct podium. Is Annelie Beumer from the Netherlands, and she scored 67.0 points. And actually, that means that Annelie is moving from she was on P12 after Monaco, and she's moving up all the way to P2 in the standings.
Wow!
And on P4, we usually don't go all the way down to P4, but on P4 this weekend is somebody named Samantha Horvath.
Honestly, Anton did mention this to me before the podcast, and I thought he was just teasing me. I did not think that was correct.
Neither did I. I checked it three. I checked it three times because we felt we had very similar predictions. But you know, Sam, the thing is that so we both went actually for the same podium of Verstappen, Leclerc, Norris. But the reason why you've scored a lot of points is because you had Hamilton on P4, you had Piastri on P5, and you had Alonso on P6. So you had all of those correct. And that got you 100% of the points for those spots, and that's 12, 10, and 8 points. So yeah, you actually you did very, very well, and it also means that you're making up a lot of ground in the standings, because you were previously P187. You're moving up 102 places. Sorry, on P85 now. So
wow.
Yeah. But,
not
I mean,
bad.
It's
not too shabby.
No, definitely not. And. It looks like it pays out to witness things on track and get some inside info. Although
that's right.
Maybe that means I wasn't paying attention, because I finished P272 with the same podium, like I mentioned. But all the rest of it was a little bit more tangled up. And
it's because you chose. We had this conversation about Hamilton, if you recall.
Right. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. No, he had good. Practice sessions on the Friday, and mm-hmm. I didn't think I just thought that perhaps Mercedes had spiked up his engine for a little bit and just wanted to
I mean
the Mercedes I've seen it more often that they have good practice sessions, but they actually seemed on it for the whole weekend. It's actually a surprise to me that Hamilton qualified P7, I think, which was relatively low for how good of a weekend he was having.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was saying after the race too that if he would have had a better qualifying, he would have been able to compete for the win. Although I guess more drivers would probably claim that. I think the Ferraris would have said the same thing if they would have qualified higher up. Anyway, maybe even Perez, but who knows. So I moved from P13 down to P18 this weekend. So I don't know, Sam, it's
not a bad place though for you to still be in.
No,
so.
That's right. It's still top 20. That's that's where I'm aiming for. Looking at the rankings, Matthew Berger, who was P1 after Monaco, he drops to P5, and our new P1 comes in straight from P4, and it's someone that has been in the top 3 already various times this season, but I think he was never yet P1. It's Rosario Vinci from France. He scored 52 points this weekend in Canada, so that brings him to P1. And our P2, I already mentioned, Annelie Beumer. She's only 9.5 points away from the P1 place, so still very exciting to see where that goes. On P3, coming in from P6, is Robin Kessler from Germany, and they're the three people currently on that top 3, and it keeps on switching up, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens in 2 weeks. We're going to have a race in Barcelona. Looking at the high scores, well, because of the high score being 73 points, we're not really going to have anyone enter in any of the high scores. But when we look at the accumulated points for all the countries, we see that there's a couple of changes in the first few places. So the UK overtakes France and is now P4. Spain overtakes in the USA and is now in P6. And then we see a little bit further on Indonesia overtaking Poland, and they're now at P23. And there's a couple of other movements in those country rankings, and they will be posted later on the Instagram page together with some other details and other stats. Sam, I think this is the moment that we've been looking forward to. At least I have been. You beat me during the game. You finished P4, so I'm expecting you to do very, very well on the
on the
quiz this weekend. And I think it's probably my turn to start. I think we've been mixing this up a couple of times.
Yeah, I can't recall, but well, you go. You start anyway.
You know, I have a better idea.
Uh-oh.
Okay, it's going to be the person that finishes higher in the game during that weekend who either gets to pick who starts or who needs to start.
Okay.
So
okay,
you're you're P4. I don't want to repeat it, but I'm P272.
No, that's okay. You can repeat it. Because you know what? I don't mind every once in a while when I can take the win.
No,
I will soak it in.
Yeah. Okay. So you get to pick who starts.
You can start.
Okay. I will start. So that's P1 for Stappen. And I feel like... Yeah, actually, I might actually still... Okay, I've made a couple of preliminary numbers. But of course, with Verstappen having that issue in FP2, I'm thinking a lot of people may have shifted. I'm gonna go... Okay, so there's 887 people who are playing the game. I'm gonna say it's only been 450 people. Yeah, about 450 people. Maybe even still... Well, okay. Yeah, I'm gonna stick it at 450. Sam, what do you say?
Okay. I'm going to go with 501.
Okay, all right. Which moves us to Norris on P2.
Okay, that's my go. Norris on P2. I'm going to say 100. Actually, I'm changing that. Maybe not. Now I'm doubting it. The thing is that the placements for everyone has become so much more dense that it, in terms of where they could be, that it really makes it more difficult when it comes to the numbers now.
That's a good point, actually.
Especially the top five.
Yeah,
so
true.
I'm going to say, with that be in mind, I'm going to say 187.
187. I'm going to go with 188.
Okay. They're playing that strategic game. Okay.
We always do.
Yes.
And P3 Russell. I've already given away that it's at least four people, because there was two people who went with the podium of Leclerc, Norris, Russell, and there were two people who went with Verstappen, Norris, Russell. I'm saying that in total there have been 20 people who went with Russell in P3.
Okay, I'm going to go less than you. I'm going to go with an actual number less, though. I'm thinking the number 12.
Okay, yeah, that's an actual number.
Well, I mean like lower. If I were to have done 19 just to go lower, then, you know, I could. But
yeah,
I'm thinking
that's completely
of...
up to you.
Yeah.
Okay, Hamilton on P4.
That's my go.
Yeah, that's your go.
I'm going to say 87.
It's going to be more than that, Sam. I'm going to go with 88.
Very confident in that. Okay. So we're on to P5.
Yeah, that's Piastri. And I'm going to go with 180.
Okay. I am going to say... Well, I'm going to go 179 then.
All right. 179 it is. Moving us to Alonso.
Mm-hmm. Alonso, I'm going to say 120.
120. I'm going to go with 121 in that case.
Mm-hmm.
And let us make a little bit of time to talk about home hero Lance Stroll, who we haven't mentioned during this podcast.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
I just realized that. We're here on his home soil and we didn't even mention anything about Lance.
Yeah, I'm shrinking together from shame. I mean, we should have talked about him. He finished 10th or 9th last year. Didn't he overtake Bottas on the finish line?
He overtaked Bottas on the finish line, which was actually... really, really great to see. That was quite thrilling.
But he had a good race.
That.
I mean, there was not too many spectacular things about it, I think. But for Lance Stroll, that is a good thing by itself. And I mean, yeah, P7, that's a decent amount of points. That's 6 points. And right behind Alonso. It's not a bad weekend for Lance.
No. And I think even during qualifying, he was doing fairly well. Practice sessions, he was up at the top as well. So then...
Right, he was. He was setting good times.
Setting very good times. He was really, really stretching it at the Wall of Champions quite a few times. He was just... he was leaving no room for any space, just grazing the wall in some points during FP3. But yeah, overall, I think that it was a good weekend for Stroll, considering, and also overall a decent one for Aston Martin, because like you said, with Alonso and then Stroll following behind him, that does give them points. However, I do feel a little bad that I'd never even mentioned him at all during this entire weekend.
Five
is the number that you believe he's...
five people who picked him
with that being said, this is Anton now follows it up with the confidence that he has in everybody in choosing where him being in P7.
Well, I didn't have Stroll in P7. That's one thing, that's for sure. Didn't you have him in my top 10? Neither did you.
That's a very good question, and I'm going to plead the fifth. Anyways, I'm going to choose 6 people because I feel like I would like to hope that maybe there's a few more that picked him in P7, although I don't know if I was one of them.
Yeah, and well, hope and realism are sometimes very, it's very, very, yeah. Okay.
That's true.
Well, next one's going to be interesting too. I think from now on, all of them are going to be interesting. But but Danny Rick, how many people went for Danny Rick on P8?
Wow. Well, I know there are definitely some pretty strong Danny Rick fans. So some may have had quite a bit of confidence that he would do well. With that being said, I'm going to say 15.
Oh, really? That many?
That many. Okay. I think that a lot more people, although I think a lot of people would love to see him in that number, I think a lot more people would be choosing him around the 10.
Okay, well, spot, I guess so. You already know what I'm going with.
You're going to go less than me, so you're going to say 14.
That's exactly right. Brings us to Pierre Gasly.
Yeah, great result for Pierre, actually.
Yeah, it was. And he's been... it took him a while to score points, but now he's on it, scoring points both in Monaco and here in Canada. I'm gonna say the same five as not the same five people that went for Stroll on P7. That would be a coincidence, but 5 people I'm going with.
Okay, I'm gonna say 4.
Yeah. Okay. Good. That's. I think. Yeah. You might take that one. Anyway, we'll see. Ocon on P10.
I'm gonna go with a little bit higher because I always find that a lot of people pick with P10, it's kind of like a wild card because it's one point.
I see that happen.
So with that being said, I'm going to go with 12 people.
I think that's a very good guess. I'm not sure where I'm going to go.
He's going to rest on 11, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure. I mean, you are right. Like, a lot of people go, and there's a few more people who played the game this weekend.
That is true. That is true.
But then again, who goes for Ocon on P10?
Well, I mean, obviously some people do, right?
Okay. And 11, he, 11 it is.
I think it's very... Look, I don't think it's a bad choice at the end of the day because, I mean,
because he finished there.
No, because statistically he does finish around that when he does have a good... When he's... Last year, think about where he positioned himself. I mean, a lot of the time it was, if he was gaining points, it was around 9-10, P9, P10. So, I mean...
Fun fact, we both went with the same P10 this weekend. Do you remember what that was? There's a very, very difficult
Sonoda.
Face.
I mean, Sonoda. I had to really think about that. I mean,
yeah, we
at
both
this point,
went with Sonoda.
I have to think, it's taking a little bit more time to think because the brain has just been completely overstimulated this weekend. So,
and I'm the one drinking.
And I'm having water.
Yeah.
So that's my problem.
Maybe that is the problem.
Yeah, truly. But I think that, yeah, I mean, Sonoda is always, I don't know, lately this year, I find Sonoda is a safe bet when it comes to putting him in that position because even if he doesn't fall under P10, he's lately been falling maybe even P9, somewhere where even if it's close, you're getting a point. Well, I mean, a half point, I guess, technically, if he finishes P9. Anyways, I'm just talking at this point.
Well, if you have him on P10 and he finishes P9, you score 1 point because you're one place off. You score 50% of his 2 points.
But if
you put somebody on P10 and that person finishes either on P10, P9, or P8, you score 1 point.
Because
100% of one is one, 50% of two is one, and 25%
is one.
Of four is also one.
Let's go to fastest lap
I
now,
know,
Hamilton.
I know. Actually, just for the record, I went with 11 in the end for Ocon.
You went with 12, exactly what I thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
I'm doing it for that reason.
Yeah, okay.
Hamilton on P10. And I don't know if you remember, but
fastest lap.
Yeah, What I wanted to say is that last race we also had Hamilton on fastest lap, and do you remember how many people predicted that?
No, I do not.
I think it was 10 people, if I'm not mistaken, and we went too low. But there was fewer people playing the game. So let's make this one, because it might be, you know, we sometimes tie until getting to the first 10. So last time out... Oh, sorry. So, oh, okay, so... I went with 9, you went with 10, but in the end it was 28 people who went with Hamilton on fastest lap.
A lot of people. And look, I mean, it's not a bad
decision.
And
we had 763 people playing the game at that point.
Okay.
So now it's over 100 people more. Hamilton had gotten fastest lap last race, which might mean that more people are going to put him there. Because I think it's my turn, so I'm just, you know,
I'm laying out here
my reasoning.
Yep.
So if it was 28, but there's also people who are gonna think like he's never gonna get it twice in a row. So
I mean, there could be.
But it would also be, you know, I'm gonna go with 25, and I cannot explain my reasoning, which doesn't happen very often. but it may have something to do with the drinking. All right, Sam, how many people do you think had Hamilton on fastest lap today?
I'm going to go the opposite thought process that you have, and I'm going to go above what previously was the number of 28, and I'm going to say 37.
Whoa.
You're leaving room in between.
Yeah.
Well, because again, he was doing well during the practice sessions, right? And I think that maybe there's more people. You see him doing better. You see the Mercedes have a little bit more pace. Maybe you put more confidence in Hamilton and think he's going to secure fastest lap. So
maybe.
Let's see, though. I'm looking forward to these results since we've decided to break them down quite a bit. So.
Yeah, but we're going to need some sort of an intermezzo, Sam, because
that is true, although it usually
doesn't take that long. Your intermezzos usually take longer than this whole thing. That's no criticism at all, but it is true. I actually have the results ready.
Oh, I was going to say, well, while you're waiting, I could describe Spain that's upcoming in 2 weeks.
Not necessary. We'll do that afterwards.
Very quick.
But
okay.
we need to look at scores, Sam. Okay, so we're going to go first to Verstappen. And I went with 450. You went with 187. I'm only three away. It's 453. So, I'm even surprised myself. we then move on to Norris. You went with 187, which made me go with 188. It's 230.
Oh, no. I see this trend.
Yeah. But the next point's going to go to you, and you were only one away. So Russell.
Really?
Yeah, Russell on P3, which I think is one of the interesting ones. I went with 20. You went with 12. It's 13 people.
Hmm.
So that one's definitely your point. Which moves us to the second Mercedes finishing on P4. Lewis Hamilton. You went with 87.
Mm-hmm.
I went with 88. It was 45 people. So that's another point for Samantha.
We're tied.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, we are. Piastri on P5. 180 for me. You went with 179. One of the few times where you play a strategic game. But you should have played it in the opposite direction. It's 219 people who went with Piastri there.
Okay.
So it's 2-3. We then go to the two Aston Martins. Alonso. You went with 120. I thought it was going to be more. I went with 121, but it was not more. It was only 69 people. So it's 3-3. Stroll. That's a good one.
This is a good one. This was the one that we were obviously stuck on. Okay.
It was 5 for me, and it was 6 for you. And that's going to be a point for Miss Horvath, because it was 17 people who went with Stroll.
Look
on,
at
on
that.
P7.
And you were hesitant on the confidence in people. 17 chose Stroll, and they were right.
Incredible. I'm speechless. I'm speechless. Danny Rick on P8. You went with 15, which made me go with 14. It was only 6 people. So it's 4-4.
We're just neck and neck here.
This is good. Gasly on P9. 5 for me, 4 for you. It's 21 people.
No way.
Yeah, it's incredible. I really wouldn't have 21 people who went with Gasly on P9. It's my point.
It's interesting. I just want to point out the fact that 6 people chose Ricardo, who, I mean, in terms of car alone performance right now, and
yeah, but
he's a little bit better.
But P8 is, I mean, if you're going to pick the first 4 teams, you're probably not picking any V-carbs, and then after the first 4 teams, maybe the P9s and the P10s. So yeah, only 6 people who picked Ricardo.
More surprised that more people chose Gasly around that line than Ricardo.
Yeah, but let's say Ricardo would have finished on P9. I think it wouldn't have been 21 people. It would have been
a higher number.
Yeah, a much
higher
number.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point.
Let us move on. We go to Ocon on P10. By the way, yeah, so last point.
Make sure you mention goes to you.
Yeah, yeah. But P10 is going to go to you, Sam. Because Ocon, there was 15 people who went with Ocon on P10. So that's actually interesting. There was less people that went with Ocon on P10 than that went with Gasly on P9.
Mm.
So 15 is closer to the 12 that you went with, and I went with 11. So that means it's going to be decided
based on Hamilton
on fastest lap. And this is what we were talking about.
Yes.
And we had no idea. I don't know. Can you do some sort of a drum sound somewhere?
Used to play the drums, but I don't know if I can actually do it.
Are you actually going to do it?
No. I don't think I'm going to save everybody's
ears. She was
here,
before I said that. Okay. Anyway, I went with 25. You went with 37. Sam, it's the first time this year that you won.
Oh, my goodness. I am so glad that out of all the times that I have lost, that the one time that I win, we are both in the same room, so I can be able to relish this moment. Yes.
It was.
And what was the number, though?
It was 48 people that went with
Hamilton
on fastest lap. Yeah. My reasoning, which was completely lacking, didn't work at all.
Yeah, you were going with what? I mean, I'd like to know that thought process. I think at one point you mentioned that you didn't really have one. You were just going with the number.
Yeah, no need to rub it in.
That
so.
Seemed to really work well for you.
Yeah.
But
so.
Yes, I am happy. So overall, great weekend for me this this weekend when it comes to points. I finished 4th somehow. I still have no idea. Even though you've explained it to me, I still don't understand how that was possible. And but more importantly, I got to say, it's a more satisfying result to finally win the points game that we play, because that we play consistently and I consistently lose, so it's nice.
It is something different for a change. It's very good. Look, Sam, I think it's time that we talk a little bit about the next race, which is in 2 weeks, which is Barcelona, another regular race weekend. There's no sprint race. We don't know how long Barcelona is going to be in the calendar for, because we're going to have a street race in Madrid in a couple of years. And you know, Barcelona is a track that the drivers know very well. We've tested there for many years. They did make some changes to the track recently or in the last couple of years, but yeah, it's gonna be a weekend. Well, we're going back to Europe, and that means also the timing is going to be slightly different. Means predictions need to be made slightly earlier than they had to be during the Canadian weekend. And yeah, Sam, what are the things you're looking forward to in Spain?
I would say the one thing that I am most looking forward to in Spain is going to be just seeing the gap itself in terms of competition for the teams up front has been shortening. That window has been shortening time and time again over the last five races, I would say. So now that we've seen with Montreal the Mercedes come more up to a quicker pace, and you see Russell landing on the podium for the first time this season, and you see Hamilton finishing just behind him, now we're looking at a much more, I think, thrilling front end there between the Red Bulls, McLaren. I would assume and like to also hope that Ferrari can be in that conversation for next weekend, or I guess technically 2 weeks from now. And now we have Mercedes in that conversation. So very much looking forward to seeing how that plays out.
Yeah, and actually Mercedes, you mentioned them. Actually, last year we had both Hamilton and Russell on the podium actually at Barcelona.
That's right.
So that does make for interesting thought process, given that indeed, well, maybe, you know, I don't know to what extent this was track specific for Mercedes, but they do seem to be back at it. So that's interesting. Who holds the fastest lap record in Barcelona, Sam? It's somebody currently on the grid. So maybe a good idea for your picks.
Oh, you're gonna ask me this question? Let's see.
If you don't get him, if you don't get it right, you've got to put him as your fastest lap prediction for.
Well, I will say this: I got the Jacques Villeneuve question. This was off, obviously, the podcast. But if you remember, this was just the other day. You asked me what year did he win the world title?
Ah, yeah,
that in F1.
Yeah, that you got correct,
and I got that right. It was 1997. But anyways, I'm not so confident in this one. But I'm going to go with hometown favorite Fernando Alonso.
No, that means you gotta put him on your fastest lap prediction for
wait, I never agreed to that.
Nah, but you know, I took the silence as agreement.
Oh.
It's Valtteri Bottas, actually.
Really?
Yeah, but
interesting.
Yeah,
well, I definitely wouldn't have chosen him. That's for sure.
But now you will.
And yeah, yep.
All right.
Well, Anton, it's been a pleasure having you here in Montreal this week, and even more so for us to physically be a part of, once again, a thrilling Grand Prix together. And I, you know, bid you bon voyage, unfortunately, in a day or so, back to the Dominican, back to very warm weather, away from the rain and unpredictability of Montreal in terms of weather. But all in all, I think we've had a really, really great time, and it's also been a pleasure for us to once again be here physically in the same room to be able to record the podcast, I think.
Well, it's actually interesting because prior to the race weekend, we had a couple of very nice days of weather here.
That's true.
In Montreal. It was very warm. It was very sunny. So I think you're all getting a little bit of a wrong impression from this city, because it's actually quite nice.
No, it is very nice. I will say that as someone who lives in this city, it's a beautiful city, and we actually have been very fortunate in our weather.
Yeah, no, and in the end, it was great to experience the race week here. Loved it, and well, there's still one day left for me here for a good hangover. So I would say cheers to y'all, and well, we hope to have you listen to the podcast next race after Spain.
That's right.